I'll show up. I might be there. The standard for signing up to be on the podcast this week is just typing into the group chat.
I think I could be there.
I don't fucking know right now. All right, we'll see if we see you.
I might be there, possibly. Hello.
It's kind of the same way that I RSVP to family events, which is just like, we'll see how I feel that day, Mom.
Let's see if I can stomach you people for...
Definitely don't make extra food, but like, hey, if I show up and there's still some potluck left, I'll eat. But you know, don't go out of your way. Don't make my favorite.
Some potluck?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that a? Do you think a potluck is a dish?
No, but just like if there's some of the potluck food
left.
Some of the potluck. I'm not bringing a dish, okay? But if I see hors d'oeuvres all over a table, you can't separate me from it. So
I wish people were more clear about when things were like. To me, if you're encouraged to bring a dish, that's a potluck.
I think so. Have you been in scenarios where you brought a dish and then you were like, well, like happy potluck, and everyone was like, Bryn, you can't say that. It's not a potluck.
No, that's not what I mean. I just mean I wish people were like, because I'll bring something. Mm-hmm. I'll go to the store and buy something if you want something.
Yeah. Sometimes there's too much though. Everyone brings a dessert and there's no meal.
I feel like if you're gonna have a potluck, you have to designate someone as making the actual entree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like you got to have the one guy who's like, I'm making 16 pounds of brisket and bringing it all.
Right.
And then everyone else brings the sides, right?
Well, the thing is that a potluck is very unlike an event that you host yourself, or you could just do everything up in your head and be like, did I order such and such thing? Did I get this and that? Whereas like, a potluck requires basically like a part-time project manager with a little Excel sheet, emailing people and Facebook messaging like, you remember that you're on plastic cup duty this week, right?
That's right, like, right.
Yes, I remember that I'm on plastic cup duty. Okay, get off my back. And then you close the chat bubble and you're like, I have to go to Dollar General right now.
Of course I remember. Yes, that's true. And in that way, it's also like, why wouldn't you just collect money from people? To be like, okay, it's a potluck. Everyone trusts this person to use all of the money to make good food for everybody. Mm. And then we just...
I feel like that's more of like a college house move where it's like, okay, we have one person who knows how to buy groceries and cook. So everyone give them $10 and they'll make spaghetti.
That's or what like, makes more sense.
Yeah, I feel like a potluck is more like everyone can show off their own dish and be like, I made this, I made that. Like everyone's good at different stuff.
There's a lot of assumptions about people having dishes.
Yeah.
I love the idea of like a frat house though, where there's like, you know, fucking 12, 19-year-old dudes all living together with big Greek letters over the door. And they're just like, okay, bros, none of us know how to cook. All right. But I'm an engineering major and I did the math. If we pool our money and hire a caterer three times a week and live off of leftovers for 2 days at a stretch once a week, we'll be all right, my dudes. And like once a month, we could get something nice too, like, you know, foco de chao.
What's foco de chao?
It's a chain Brazilian steakhouse.
Oh, nice.
Oh, damn.
Hell yeah.
Which is really my good idea of what a frat boy would think is like fine dining.
Probably is pretty fine, honestly.
I've been there once. It was really nice and really expensive, but it was also like it kind of felt like I was in the Cheesecake Factory version of an actual nice restaurant or an actual Brazilian experience. You know what I mean?
That's fair, yeah.
It's funny when those things are like kind of nice. Like, do you remember Bonefish Grill?
Yeah, they had the funny little like the Bonefish logo, and it had the colors that are like all washed out kind of. So it was like blue and brown and stuff.
But some of those restaurants were really nice and like the food was pretty good. And I was just like, I don't know. I guess this is everyone's saying it's not fancy, but I guess I don't know what fancy is.
Well, I'm looking at a picture of a fogo de chão, and there's like a decoration.
Fogo de chão.
I think it's like with a G. At least that's what I found on Google. And it has like, it looks like Han Solo frozen in carbonite. You seeing this?
Yeah.
Why do you have that?
That's just what came up. It's like, as you go up the stairs on the second floor of this restaurant, there's Han Solo in carbonite.
And this is Han Solo in carbonite, the conversation piece of the restaurant. We feature this here because Han Solo, unlike many of our favorite bands, came to Brazil.
No one is actually ever coming to Brazil.
No. Well, you know, it's funny because like, I'm not above like a fake nice restaurant that's actually just a national chain. Like I've had a great time in Margaritaville, and I routinely go to P.F. Chang's. I like P.F. Chang's. I know that it's not actual authentic Asian food, but it is recipes that are so full of sugar and random spicy shit that it's like laser targeted at my Dutch ass.
Yeah, I mean, who cares if it's delicious? I mean, like, you don't have to, even if you don't have to like consider it to be the greatest food of all time to be like, this is kind of fancy.
Yeah,
it's costing me upwards of $20 per person. So I'm calling it fancy.
Well, and it's also like, I don't know, I've been to legitimately like nice restaurants. Like when I lived in Pittsburgh, I had occasion to go to, you know, there were a few out on the East End, but the one that I really remember was the Monterey Bay Fish Grotto, because it's way up on Mount Washington.
Fish Grotto.
Very near the top of the hill, there's like a skyscraper, or at least a very, very tall building. And up on like the 20-something floor is a restaurant. So you get in the, you like get valet parked, and then you get in this elevator, you go way, 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 way up, and then you pay like $55 for a swordfish steak.
Oh my God.
And it's fucking amazing.
Swordfish is really good.
It's
this
so
sounds very
good.
Fancy.
It was, it's the fanciest place I've ever been, and it's not close. But even that, like, I think if you're like a legitimately rich person, you're just like, this is a McDonald's.
Yeah,
you know, like,
I guess that's why rich people hire a private chef. It's like, if you have enough money that even a really fancy restaurant, you're like, I could wipe my ass with this much money, I might as well hire someone to make me whatever food I want all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if I had personal chef money, I would die like a medieval king. Like, I would get gout right away, and diabetes would not be far behind. Like,
if you could have like the fanciest, like most decadent version of whatever delicious food you could think of at all times, it'd be hard to not eat it.
Yeah, it'd be really hard to not wake up every morning and be like, what do you call your personal chef? Garçon?
No, that's boy.
Yeah.
That just means like servant.
Oh,
but I guess you could call anybody boy.
Yeah. If you're rich enough, you can call him Garçon.
Yeah, I'll call him Garçon. Maybe his name is Garçon. I don't know.
I'd be like, maybe Garçon, that's a boy.
For breakfast, shrimp and grits, please. Right away, sir. And then, you know, a few hours later, you're getting hungry again. You're like, Garçon, for lunch, I'm thinking shrimp and grits. Will that be the same for dinner, sir? You know me so well, Garçon.
My name is Pierre. Yeah. I don't care.
I don't care.
You're paying me a lot of money, and it's pretty easy to make shrimp and grits. I can make other stuff that's harder.
He's like they muttering have, like, in the kitchen. He's like, I graduated top of my class from 3 different prestigious universities to make what? Shrimp and grits?
Every day?
Every day. 3 times a day. And he's, once in a while, like, he has me scoop ice cream.
The fucking the kitchen looks like pristine and really fancy and has like marble countertops and stuff, but then like actually he's just like has a huge vat with a spigot on it that has cooked shrimp and grits in it that he's just like pouring out like oatmeal and gruel.
Yeah, like he obviously bought ingredients to cook other stuff too. There's like an old moldy sack of potatoes off in the corner and like a discarded bag of rice. And there's like, you know, a bunch of
that stuff, but for the other staff.
Yeah, yeah. He might like dip into it, but he's just like, I fired the rest of the staff. All I need is the shrimp and grits. I make too much money to quit, but I hate myself.
I do not give a shit about life.
I used to work with an Algerian baker, Mo, who would work overnight, and he'd always be drunk when I came in the morning. I told some stories about him on the pod, and he very much had the energy of this garçon guy we've kind of cooked up. Just like permanently disgruntled, always a little drunk, but highly capable.
Yeah. He was just baking shit overnight, like he was baking bread and cookies and stuff.
Yeah, I think he came in at like 11, and so when I came in at like 6 in the morning to wrap up the bread and start delivering it, he would have one of those, like, you know, food service to go soup containers, and he would just be like dumping beer into it from the tap and drinking it while he gave me the rundown of everything he did, and then he would walk upstairs where he lived and pass out.
That's kind of awesome. I mean, it's like 6 a.m. You're about to clock out. That's basically his 5 p.m. beer.
Yeah.
After making a bunch of bread and shit.
Yeah, he ruled. Shouts out to Mo.
Yeah, that guy sounds cool.
Hope he's still out there baking somewhere.
He's out there baking somewhere.
Hope he's out there baking.
Just like, I'm in here, baking. I can't find my fucking weed pen, actually. I'm having a minor crisis right now on the pod. Hold on.
How are you going to power the podcast without weed?
How am I possibly going to do that? What was the thing that I said I wanted to talk about on the pod? Save it for the pod, I said.
Oh, to yourself?
Save it for the pod,
I
said.
No, you guys brought something up and I was like, we got to slam this record button. What was it?
Oh, shit. Sydney Sweeney? Or is it something
Sydney
else?
Sydney Sweeney. Oh, yeah. The Why woke. Are people angry at this? Not even, they're not even mad at her, right?
They're not like, mad. That's the thing. I think they're like celebrating.
Oh, wait, hang on a second. Is there something going on? I don't really know about.
Well, not really. There's some kind of like rag in Canada called the National Post. I don't know.
National Post.
There was a tweet where there was just like a picture of Sydney Sweeney in like the SNL outro, and you know she has boobs. You could kind of see her. You can see her cleavage pretty well. And he said, "Wokeness is dead." And then somebody wrote an article expounding on this. I read the article.
Wokeness is dead.
It's very stupid. So
I didn't realize that.
The lady in the article like references this tweet among others. And I guess the logic is like, you have the
But there is an article.
There is an article in the Canada Post or the National Post, which is from Canada. Some kind of
pretty
like,
presumptuous of Canadians to think that the National Post gets across that this newspaper is from Canada and not the United States.
I don't think they want you to
UK.
Know that. Yeah. So I think it's not very long or super well argued, but I think her point is like you have the woke, like blue hair, you know, Democrat communists, like their vision of
Democrat,
like
Democrat communists.
It's like their vision of who's running the world is like woke blue hair people, mm-hmm. and apparently. Those people are always saying, you know, everyone's beautiful. Even ugly people are beautiful. You know, overweight people are beautiful, whatever.
The barista with purple hair is pulling the strings of the New World Order. And she wants me to think that women that I'm not personally attracted to are attractive to some other people.
That's the first step. That's the world we establish. And then apparently Sydney Sweeney upends that because she's a more conventionally attractive blonde actress with big boobs, so therefore this kills the woke agenda of only saying ugly people are hot, and actually we have a hot girl who's hot, so
wokeness is dead
destroyed.
Wokeness is dead because we finally have a 1970s Aryan beer commercial Fraulein on television again, which is like, one, a diseased argument from the outset, but two, not even a thing that hadn't been happening. There are plenty of women who are very conventionally attractive in a, like, I don't even know what they're going for here, but I'm thinking it has something to do with like 1950s kind of pinup style beauty standards.
Yeah.
That never, ever went away. There's a dude right now listening to Led Zeppelin in a garage, working on a Camaro with a whole calendar of women who look just like this on this wall.
Not even the fact that we're inundated with pornography and you know, people of blonde persuasion with big titties.
Yeah.
Like not only
most
that,
social media
but
is like driven by
I
that.
Believe on this show I've talked about how actresses in America kind of all became the same blonde lady. Like I don't know the difference between there was one named Blair. There was one named Jennifer
Lawrence. Sure. She's like basically built like Sydney Sweeney. Like she
basically everybody looks like that though. Like even Emma Stone like slowly turned into like a blonde norm. Like everyone looks like Margot
Robbie.
She
used to be redhead.
Yeah.
I literally don't even know all the names of the people.
It's also like really funny. Like, what's the beauty standard that this is supposed to be rebelling against? There's some guy who's just like pissed off sitting around like, I can't believe people think Alison Brie is attractive. Like, what are you talking about? Like, are you mad that Aubrey Plaza is on television? Or like, what's the fucking deal? Like, I can't think. What's the opposite of Sydney Sweeney? They're not on TV.
Yeah. Since its inception, film and TV has been heavily driven by trying to put conventionally attractive, young, skinny women with big boobs on display.
That's so true.
Because they want men to watch TV and buy shit. Like, that's who they're targeting.
Watch out. Chris is doing 19th wave feminism on the show, folks. He's breaking ground. Nobody's observed this before.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what feels so funny is that it's like the argument against it. It's like, have you seen anything on TV ever. Have you seen American pop culture?
It's weird though, because like it used to just be this thing where it was like if there was a sitcom family and like they talked about abortion really openly, or they had a gay character or something, that was what got people riled up. And then eventually it became a little more alienated, and then people were like, I don't even want to see the homosexuals in my bank commercials. They're encroaching on everything. It used to just be the family sitcoms, and now it's the goddamn insurance commercials. And now we're just supposed to be like, who is and is not famous is the arbiter of all politics now. Yeah. And it's like, wow, you really boiled that down to its bare essentials, didn't you?
This one, I mean, that's like, this is, I feel like I've been saying this all week. I've been kind of stuck on this idea that, like, okay, so politics has become culture a long time ago. That's not like new, but there's
okay,
this
Frederick Jameson.
What? Like, I just mean like it's in like every concept of like a possibility has been foreclosed on, right? Like
it's mostly just culture wars, yeah, and like arbitrary like cultural signifiers is what people like focus on more than actual like political differences.
Right. And that's like normal, but I feel like what's gotten really strange to me personally is like the amount of like even liberal you know, woke politics have become like return to tradition, but for like 90s cartoons.
Yeah,
well, I saw a TikTok the other day that was like this black guy complaining that everyone is like, wow, you were like, were you like raised by white people? Were you adopted by white people or whatever? And he was like, we used to hold space for black nerds, and like showed pictures of like the kid from Sister Sister and like Urkel or whatever. And is like, what happened to us? And it's just like, what are you talking about, man?
Thundercat is one of the most famous musicians on the whole fucking internet. Zach Fox is in a hit television show. What are talking about, dog? Abbott Elementary. He's Tariq, who is, of course, he wasn't even supposed to be like a mainstay character, but everyone likes him so much they keep bringing him back.
Nice. That sounds cool. I mean, which is one of those scenarios where the guy was like already kind of famous online, so then it's like creates buzz for the show. And they're
I think the writers of Abbott Elementary did such a good job writing in Zach Fox's voice for the character of Tariq that there was this thing where every time you'd see Quinta Brunson or anyone else in an interview, they're like, do you just let Zach Fox do Zach Fox things on that show? And they're like, no. The writers write scripts and then the actors act the scripts. They just understand his sense of humor because he informs it because he's a very high powered Twitter user. And then the interviewer, except on Hot Ones, the interviewer is invariably like, I don't believe you.
That's not true.
I get it. Like Zach Fox is a towering figure of comedy and just a big personality. But let's not do great man theory on television celebrities. Okay, like come on.
Yeah, sitcoms are very tightly scripted. You can't just riff them unless you're doing Curb Your Enthusiasm.
That's like I Think You Should Leave. I think I read an article where
I Think You Should Leave.
But I read an article where what's the guy who runs I Think You Should Leave?
Tim Robinson.
They asked him, they were like, do you let people do improv on the show? And he was like, no, I don't let anybody improv. The sketches are pre-written and they're acted out in a very specific way. Except when I had Bob Odenkirk on, I let him do improv.
Nice.
And I was like, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, he's Bob. It's kind of like, I think if you had Jack Black on something, you would just kind of let him Jack Black it up. Yeah. When somebody has that unique flavor that they bring to things, you should just let them do it.
I mean, if you hired them, that's kind of on you. Like, yeah. Just let them do what they do. You don't do Jack Black as good as Jack Black does.
No, that's true. Imagine hiring Jack Black and being like, hey, could you give me like a real Mark Proksh kind of affectation?
So I was
could you be
like
a Cordry for me?
So I was hoping you could do, his name fell out of my head. What the hell is the name of the guy from Sideways who played the rhino?
Oh, Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti.
Yeah. Yeah, can you give us a little schlubby Paul Giamatti?
Jack Black, do a little Paul Giamatti for us. What?
I haven't thought about Sideways in fucking 10 years.
I forgot he played the rhino in what? The Amazing Spider-Man? Like one of those, like.
That's right.
The Facebook movie guy,
that's
Eduardo
funny.
Saverin.
I couldn't remember his name, but not you guys don't know anything he's been in.
Ruffalo? Or no, fucking
Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti. Yeah, I know shit he's been in. He's been in Sideways. He's just in that new movie, The Holdovers.
Yeah, he's in lots of stuff.
I mostly know Sideways as one of those DVDs that I inexplicably held onto for way after DVDs were ever relevant.
It's a good movie.
It's
Sideways,
okay.
DVD, Sideways,
I've seen it a
DVD.
Few times because I have the DVD.
Yeah, it's cute.
It's fun.
It sat right next to... I've also seen a bunch of the Coen Brothers movies a bunch of times over and over again because I had those on DVD. Not a big DVD collection in my house. Mostly just those two things.
Every Coen Brothers movie and Sideways.
Yeah. Nice. Sideways, and then, yeah, Raising Arizona, Barton Fink, Miller's Crossing.
You're all set to be a 55-year-old dude who's like, want to watch some DVDs?
Blood Simple, Fargo, Hudsucker Proxy.
Yeah.
Great flicks.
What's the noir one? Something about Texas.
No Country for Old Men?
No.
Blood Cohen. Simple.
Blood Simple, that's the one. Yeah, that's a fucking crazy ass movie. Hard to watch if you have a short attention span, but very worth it.
The movie's good.
I'm a fan of it.
But yeah, the Sydney Sweeney thing is like, I don't know if we want to go back to that, but sure. It's weird because it's coming on the heels of like, it feels like the culture wars for like American right wingers are just becoming more and more like niche and insane and stuff they would have like just the fact that Bud Light, because they did one trans influencer, like internet advertisement, like not even a TV ad or anything. They just like did something very mildly trans positive. Mm-hmm. Is now like Bud Light is for communists. They've just ceded Bud Light to the left and Bud Light is woke now.
Oh yeah.
I mean, like,
and
football,
and
it's
communism
like,
means not specifically hating a whole type of person.
Yeah. By communists,
that's all communism means.
Yeah. They mean not a white supremacist, like transphobic, queerphobe person.
If everybody that your average like MAGA chud thought was a communist was actually a communist, we'd have a good enough education system in this country that those guys wouldn't exist anymore.
Yeah. We would have achieved global communism decades ago if there was actually that many communists.
I don't know, it's like kind of funny though, like even today I feel like it's becoming less and less shocking to people to introduce yourself as a communist. Like I finally got kind of tight with one of the guys at work and I trust him not to run his mouth. So we got to talking and I was like, yeah, man, I'm just a communist. I just think we should have a fucking socialist revolution and do away with all these war criminal liberals and conservatives, which is just splitting hairs between the difference. And he kind of looked at me and he chewed it over for a second. He was like, all right, I kind of get that, man.
And like dope.
He didn't like offer up any of his own political takes. I don't think he really cares that much, but he just like, was not hostile to it. And that's a huge fucking change from even like, I don't know, back when Bernie was running for president or whatever.
I think kind of everyone sort of understands that the reason everything they've heard about communism was from the government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, I don't trust the government. Like even the dumbest people by now are like, well, I don't trust the government, so I'm going to go ahead and say I don't know what that means.
Yeah, well, and that's causing this thing where you get like a lot of strange bedfellows situations because people who are just like batshit, just utterly fucking nuts, are starting to just be incidentally right about things at a pretty high rate overall because there's a lot of batshit people, and the law of large numbers means that with enough of them, there's just going to be a lot of people who are generally wrong saying incidentally correct things, and mm-hmm. it's really like confusing a lot of people. And then you have the inverse happening where you have people like Naomi Wolf, who like used to be like a darling of the like quasi left, the like progressive end of the Dems leading into like sock Dem kind of types, and now she's on Twitter saying things like the sky used to be more blue, but then the chemtrails ruined it and produced weird sun dogs
the
instead
chemtrails.
Of sunsets. Yeah, or whatever her fucked up crazy ass tweet was. In fact, I could probably find it.
Yeah, that tweet really, it's like it's moved from culture wars into just like mass hysteria and like general derangement.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you kind of have to imagine that, like, when, you know, when fascism starts to curdle, like, that's kind of how it goes, right? Like, everyone just starts to lose their fucking mind.
Yes, but I just feel like it's been so many decades of, like, politics as pure ideology. Like, it's two like fake sides arguing about stuff that isn't real. Like, they're just having conversations about politics that aren't rooted in anything concrete. So as long as you're moving in that way, like politics is operating in that way, it's like, if there's nothing grounding stuff, then there's no reason that people can't start believing more and more insane shit. Like, just the sky used to be more blue or whatever.
Well, and it's also like there's a thing where I think if you grew up in a relatively liberal kind of situation, like a lot of us did, you get this idea that only conservatives can be like weird freaks about their like conspiracy beliefs. And like, you look at the QAnon stuff and you feel really vindicated and you're like, oh yeah, that's really great. You know, I'm smarter than that. I would never fall for that kind of stuff.
I would never fall.
But then you
that.
Like, you start to think that like maybe vibration healing is actually really good and that like intentionality is something that really matters. And you heard from this guru that like if you just take 5 minutes every day and manifest good things for the poor and unfortunate people of the world, then that actually does make a difference. And people will like, the same person that will like laugh along with you at how insane these like MAGA chuds are will like get really deeply offended if you tell them that they're like good intentions aren't making a fucking difference in the world. So like, I think there's a really underexamined kind of liberal spiritual kind of like woo woo nonsense that is like really rearing its ugly head in modern politics. I mean, Marianne Williamson, who's funny, and I think it's fun to have her around, but I have said since she appeared on the scene, is a disaster and it's causing people to get dumber by the minute.
Yeah, I feel like in some ways, like that is like one of the distinctions. Like, if you go to people who were like well off enough and then consider themselves like liberal Democrats versus conservatives, I feel like the main difference is that they have some kind of like spiritual conception of like, we need to be like witnessing and like understanding suffering in the world and like trying to like educate ourselves to like not be causing more of it. I feel like the Curse, the HBO show that just came out a few months ago, that was like a lot of what that show was about, was like well-off liberals making a TV show about like basically gentrification, but it's like they're doing it in a woke way and they like care about Native Americans and they care about the local culture or whatever. And at the end of the day, what they're doing is the same as like any other conservative person would do, and they just have more guilt about it. I feel like that's one of like the distinctions that exists between like Democrats and Republicans at this point, is like how much they purport to care about suffering people, like whether or not their actions actually are any different.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's a very Protestant instinct in many ways that like, compared to the Catholic, like you suffer because you're guilty. You are full of sin. Compared to the Protestant, where it's like you suffer because you're in this incidental world that's full of sin. And it's really important that we record and monitor and, as you say, witness all of the suffering so that it can be observed and given its full place in the world. But it's like, then you just end up kind of being like the court stenographer of suffering, and you don't change a fucking thing. At least the Catholics occasionally flip over into, okay, it's time to do something mode. Whereas like Protestant, like this instinct of Protestantism is to just like white knuckle your way through everything. And I think that that's like very much informed late stage capitalism, especially of the American variety, is just like, no matter what happens, never take your hand off the wheel until you know, like you've slammed full speed into a wall, or the car won't run anymore, or you're out of gas, or whatever. I don't know where this analogy goes.
And it really does feel the most latest stage it's ever felt, right? Like,
keeps getting later.
It just keeps getting later in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always been a little bit like,
you can fit so many late stages in this bad boy.
I've always been a little confused as to what people like mean by that. Because I mean, I remember like hearing some arguments that's like, well, it doesn't actually mean it's almost over, but it, whatever, I don't know. It kind of seems like that's what it should mean.
I feel like that's what people imply when they're saying it. They're like, it's like a later stage of its like inevitable, like decline and decay kind of a thing. It's like it had its function, and then now that function is like outliving its existence or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the phrase was mostly pretty popular around like it started being popular around the middle of last century, right? So that's like, you figure industrial capitalism was basically born in like the mid to late 1700s in England primarily, and then spread to the rest of the world over the next like 150 years or so. So then by that point, you would say it's like mature capitalism or like fully fledged. So then, you know, that brings us to now, which is like 250 to about 300 years later. You would say that we are in the quote unquote late stages of capitalism, but I don't know. It progress is uneven, and it's important to remember that there are still monarchies in certain parts of the world. So there's always going to be, like, even if we have a global socialist revolution and, like, I don't know, like China and Vietnam and Cuba and Venezuela lead us through, you know, the golden gate into the future, there's still going to be enclaves of reaction all over the fucking world, probably in places like successful colonial projects such as the United States, Australia, but also places that retained monarchic power, like, you know, Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like, I don't know. I know historically, and like, especially in terms of like, I don't know, there's definitely a difference between proper monarchy and like, but like something like, it's hard to really feel like there's that much of a difference between like oligarchy and monarchy. Yeah. When it's like, you know, Prescott Bush has like fucking demon spawn has been in charge of the entire world for the past 100 years.
Yeah. Like, it sort of feels like we just have like the NBA version of a monarchy where it's like, we're going to be managed by like, you know, fifth generation rich kids who went to Harvard for an MBA or something. Why is that different than a prince who becomes a king?
Yeah, I know I'm not literally a serf, but it's like, I don't know. It's hard to really, you have to squint to see the differences sometimes.
Yeah.
I think like power in the hands of the few is just like such a, it's such an obvious holding on, like, you know, something that's going to cling to life for as long mm-hmm. as it's allowed until we kill it.
I mean, power is sticky, right? It's one of those things that's like self-perpetuating. I mean, we saw China experience extremely strong growing pains with this throughout the 80s, 90s, and 2000s in particular.
Yeah.
Before their big reform movement in the 2000s and 10s really seemed to get a handle on it. And then the pivot back to Marx just a few years ago, if I'm remembering correctly, really solidified them on the path that they're on now. But I mean, it's
Gangism.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I mean, they had to. I think people are ready to criticize China for allowing a certain amount of like liberal economism and capitalism into their markets. But it's also like, it's hard to generate the kinds of productive forces that you need to generate without centralizing a bunch of power in a bunch of places and without highly developed technology, both social and mechanical or electronic technology for managing these kinds of things. You know, you're just going to have to accept a certain amount of interference and noise and weird capitalist instincts and stuff in your system. I mean, we see with Vietnam, they have the classic example of what you would call like a modern mixed economy, straddling this line unbelievably well, because it's like they participate enough in capitalist markets that they have a strong international presence and can really present themselves as being a viable alternative to other countries when it comes to certain types of services and manufacturing. But they also have things like fucking price controls. So when you go to the store, you know that it's not going to break the fucking bank to buy eggs and rice and vegetables and shit, you know? So it's like there's a bunch of different ways to cross this gap between these modes of production. And I think the question is, are you in a country that is going to, in the face of global forces trending in that direction, going to be able to adopt some kind of middling path that works its way in that direction? Or are you going to become completely retrograde, completely, you know, a full-fledged state of reaction? And for countries like the United States, I think it's absolutely clear. Like, once the global forces are socialist, we're going to become the weird hermit country with no fucking friends. But I think right. If you're like a reasonably you know, somewhat modernized, relatively small social democracy in Europe, for instance, I think most of them will gradually, they'll try to hold on to whatever capitalist forms they can, but in economic terms, they'll acquiesce to whatever, you know, global system keeps goods and services coming and going from their country. Because let's say you're the fucking Netherlands, and you don't want to acquiesce to the new global order. Okay. Don't care, then perish. There's so few of you, you know, your fault anyway. Like,
yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't even like, I'm not even like entirely joking about Dengism. Like, I don't know. It could, I feel like if you look at, you know, world politics as a chess game, like you have to defend yourself, right? Yeah. And like there is no way to like defend against America unless you're like, you know, kind of just being like, hey, we're not a direct threat to you ideologically right now, like mm-hmm. we're going to sort of play the game that you've sort of, you're running the board, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, like China has always been doing this thing where they try to beat the game that's already on the table. But in doing so, they recognize that advantages you have over the game mean that you can change the rules. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. they're gradually shifting like what the fucking game is in the first place. I mean, if you look at the conditions of their investment contracts all over the world, but particularly in places like sub-Saharan Africa, which have been routinely, you know, exploited to the highest degree, far more than we exploit any other region of the world. The difference between the contracts that they're receiving from Chinese state-owned companies versus previously from US, UK, and French companies, I mean, it's astounding. They're getting like literally 100 times better deals.
Yeah. Which is awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, it's putting us on the back foot, and we're responding with, you know, militarism and this and that, but it's like, we just don't have that kind of leg to stand on.
Yeah, I mean, I think to a certain extent, it's like there's people who take it a little too far, though. Like, there's people who are like, oh, China is gonna like do, you know, the revolution and make everything good for us. And like, I doubt I'll live to see anything like that. But
yeah, I feel like they have a billion people to be concerned with before us. And it's like, maybe some of them are like, I feel bad for, you know, your average American poor person or whatever. But it's like, they got their own stuff to worry about.
It's really funny because I think it's another one of those things where like we're so ready to make fun of other people. Like,
yeah,
I think about the history of smug leftists and even like liberals and stuff being like, the Taliban is not going to bomb the Dick's Sporting Goods in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, you mm-hmm. stupid fucking Confederate flag idiot. And then we turn around and we're just like, President Xi is going to save Columbus, Ohio. It's not true. Like,
it's no way.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not to say that like everybody, you know, if you're like personally offended by this, either you are or aren't included in my critique. I'm not sure. It could go either way, frankly.
Yeah. I feel like we kind of got on this topic because we were talking about like how everyone wants to call it like late stage capitalism. And I feel like maybe what people mean by it lately, like in the 2020s, is just that it feels like the horizon of like what is a sustainable like industry and like career mm-hmm. path is narrowing, where it's sort of, I think a lot of people are feeling like the effects of capitalism on like any industry that they care about. Like, it's impossible to follow video games even casually mm-hmm. and not see like tons of conversations about all the layoffs that happen. And so I feel like it's the kind of thing, like, unless you're basically like a reactionary, like fingers in your ears chud, who's like, I don't care, I just want new Call of Duty. It's like, if you care about video games, even a tiny bit, which many people do, like most people play video games in America, you also are like, oh, hey, this company made a bunch of money on games this year and still is like laying off thousands of people. And I feel like a lot of people are looking at like the general state of American economy and they're like, well, I could have job security if I like joined the military, became a cop, worked in some kind of like tech scam, or worked for like a crypto or gambling site. Like, those are all growth industries.
Sure.
Everything else, not really. It's all collapsing.
Yeah, like I took this fucking web development course, and I'm having so much fucking trouble finding a job, because all the fucking jobs are for cybersecurity, because that's the only fucking thing is like, do you just want to do digital security theater for like a bank or a casino or the police?
Come on, don't you?
Or something? Come on, don't you? Don't you want to be a defense contractor? Don't you?
Don't you wish your defense was hot like me?
My contract brings all the boys to the yard. but it's also like, I think even like the stereotypical like specialist industries, like what used to be the go-to, like highly specialized, unbelievably educated, you know, like top tier, kids want to be this when they grow up, like a rocket scientist, right? Like you want to be a rocket scientist. And let's say you just did 12 fucking years of school. You've got your PhD. You've maybe got two doctorates. You know, you're working on postdoc stuff. You're published. You wrote a book. And it's like your career options are work for fucking NASA, who get no money. Work for fucking SpaceX, who blow rockets up every week and lay people off. Like it's the fucking, like it's, I don't even know. Like there's, like they're a restaurant,
like they're America,
like they're America. Or you can go to a competent country with a competent space program, like Russia, China, or India. That's it. Those are your career prospects. Or you can work for Raytheon.
You could work for Raytheon.
It's on the table if you want to help build missiles to murder people.
Raytheon's just like the last guy to leave the party. He's just like, I'm always available. I'm nobody's first choice, but that's okay.
I don't care.
I don't care. I'm a fucking scumbag. Well, speaking of fucking scumbags, I guess we should hit at least one story from our fucking notes, which is that I saw a tweet from Kim Kelly at Grim Kim, great poster, who said, we really don't need to be giving soft focus image rehabilitation interviews to the metalcore guy who very famously hired a hitman to kill his wife. And this is because she's retweeting a Blabbermouth.net article about Tim Lambesis, the guy who hired a hitman to kill his wife. And it says, Tim Lambesis talks rebuilding his life after surviving, quote, the most dehumanizing of life experience.
What?
Trying to murder someone dehumanized him, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, but this is just like really indicative of like American culture in general right now. I think that like people might have been too hard on folks who were like, you know, just wait till the pendulum swings back in the other direction and we're doing like rehab on all the worst kinds of guys ever. My only criticism of that position is just that like that never stopped. Like even when we were at the height of like what people think of as like SJW culture, we were doing George W. Bush rehabilitation.
For sure.
Like simultaneously with that. So I don't really understand that argument that these things are like, I think it's a matter of perspective, like whether you're tuned into one set of ideological preconditions or not is a temporal matter that changes over time. But the actual conditions of like whether or not we're trying to rehabilitate scummy guys, whether or not we're canceling people for saying, you know, whichever word we think is inappropriate or not, I think those are all actually pretty constant and they all pretty much exist simultaneously with one another.
Damn, this guy only served... Are we sentenced to 6 years in prison for this solicitation of murder? It's not really that long.
You only get 6 years. You get way more than that for actually trying to kill someone yourself. My question is, did the hitman get sentenced or was the hitman like a cop posing as a hitman?
It was a cop posing as a hitman.
That's usually what it is.
It was like, it sounds like he approached someone at a gym and it was an undercover cop who like, you know, just had him give him all the information and the money and stuff. And then that's enough to
be
convicted.
He approached... Usually it's like you find a guy online on like a fake forum for hitmen, but it would be really funny if this guy was just like, you know what? I bet this guy at the gym could kill someone. And he approaches him and the guy's just like, I'm a cop, but I'm not going to tell him that. I'll just go for this. Put him in jail.
Yeah. The Wikipedia just says he approached someone at a gym and asked if he knew anyone who would kill his wife. Citation.
What?
And then it says Lambesis met with the undercover agent posing as a hitman, codenamed Red, according to Deputy District Attorney Claudio Grasso. So maybe like he didn't directly approach him, but he just asked. And the guy was like, oh, yeah, I know someone. And it was, you know, just a cop that had like tried to work his way into the like undercover hitman scene, I guess, like the illegal murder scene. And then was like, oh, okay, this is what I was looking for, a case where someone wants to give me a bunch of money and be like, kill my wife, please. Nice slam dunk.
It is kind of funny that cops are pretty ready to pose as a hitman. They're just like, yeah, what's the fucking difference? And you know what?
What is the difference?
Literally, though. I mean, a badge, mostly. Yeah. I remember...
What's a badge, but a special way to kill?
Yeah. I remember when I had just moved to Pittsburgh and I got robbed. And, you know, I'm like 20 fucking years old. I don't have any class education. So I do what all of the older adults in my life are telling me to do, and I call the cops. And these stupid fucking cops are like, he stole $70 in your cell phone from you? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, I just need my $70 back. And they were like, well, you're not getting it, but we're going to do a sting operation on this guy. And you have to be a part of it because we don't have any officers that look like you. Yeah, they told me that. And I remember looking at him, and I think I got a lot of class education like all at once in
that
moment.
Wow. Because like, I was just like, second,
you want to put me back in danger so that you can arrest a guy where you're not even going to like promise that you get me my stuff back?
Yeah, they're basically like, asking you to like
also,
do free
to
police
do, yeah,
work.
I have to,
yeah.
Where's my pension?
Yeah,
motherfucker.
I'm doing your job for you, you ugly fucking pig. Yeah, so, you know, that was the last fucking time I ever fucking called the cops, I'll tell you that. And then, you know, so I declined to be part of the operation. They track the guy down anyway, arrest him. I never get my phone back. I never get my $70 back. And I have to appear in court twice and take the day off, which gets me in trouble with my fucking job. So it was very, very illustrative to me about what the point of the fucking police is, which is that, like, if you get robbed, you can call the police and they'll rob you again a second time.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing for the cops to be like, there's no way we'll find this guy, so you're out your money and, like, will not try to help you in any way. It's another to be like, we're going to arrest the guy and try to have you help us.
Yeah.
And also, none of this is going to result in you getting your money or phone back. It's all just so we can, like, pad our numbers out and be like, we arrested another criminal off the streets.
Yeah, in retrospect, I would have preferred that they just not catch the guy and that he just successfully have robbed me. That would
Why
have
bother?
Been a
yeah.
much better outcome.
It didn't help you that they caught him and arrested him and just meant it's like a person had to go to jail.
Yeah, I'm well, almost no, sure they... I've told this story before, but with the first year I moved to New York City, I guess my roommate's laptop got stolen out of our apartment. I guess the door was like left open or whatever, and mm-hmm. there was a party going on and someone stole his laptop. It was like noon because I worked nights, and I woke up to like pounding on the door, and I was like, what? And the cops were there and they were like, hey, can we come in? I was like, no, what are you talking about? And then my roommate had called the cops, and I was just like, I told them to leave. And like my roommate was like, oh, my laptop got stolen. We have to find it. I was like, you call the cops again. I'm moving out.
Yeah.
Like I will never live with you. Do not fucking call the cops. Are you out of your mind? I don't know. I've always hated the police since I was a little kid. I've just always known that they were out to get you.
Now, see, here's the thing. I grew up in a very, very small, very, very relatively wealthy, although my family was pretty poor. We lived on the outskirts of town in a trailer park. But the town itself was very wealthy, and we lived on the outskirts specifically because wealthy town means good school district. And my parents cared a lot about making sure that we got a relatively good education, even if it was public, which honestly makes a lot of sense considering how dumb my fucking parents were at this time. So, but
unlike now.
Unlike now, where they're still extremely dumb, but they've somehow done pretty well for themselves.
How dumb are they really?
They both married people who had a lot more sense and money than them.
That's
the solution. So anyway, the point of this is that growing up in a town of like 1,000 people, except when it's tourist season, means that like all the cops know your parents and know your first and last name and like know you personally. And if you're a townie, you get handled with kid gloves and you get treated nice. So to my mind, cops were just guys like until I was like 18, I thought cops were just guys who told you like, you got to get out of the beach parking lot. You can't be smoking weed out here because, like, I'm just not allowed to let you out here anymore. Or, like, one time I was walking home from a friend's house. Well, not really a friend. Some guy's house who I was hanging out with. And we got into a big argument about...
I was buying weed.
Well, we were buying weed together, and then we drank some Jaeger after at his house because it was on the way back to my house. And we got in a big fight because he was an asshole. And I decided to walk back to my dad's house in a blizzard. It was like 3 miles away, but it was coming down real fucking hard. And this cop stops me, and he has me unpack my laptop bag. He's like, "What you got in the bag? You look pretty drunk, and you smell like weed." These are all fair assessments. You know, I hate cops, but those were all true things. And I pull my stuff out of my bag. There's weed. There's a bowl. There's a lighter. There's paper. You know, the whole kit. And he fucking looks me dead in the eyes, and he goes, "Is there anyone you can call?" And so I call my mother to come pick me up at a gas station. He just hands me off to her. And then my mom drives me 0.2 miles from the gas station to my dad's house and drops me off. And that's like the end of it. So to my mind, like, I'm like, cops are basically a taxi service. Like,
as far as I can tell, cops aren't real.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely like smaller town style cops or like country cops. There's a whole different vibe compared to like bigger city cops. Like, if you're in like an urban environment, the cops operate like an occupying army, and often literally are. Like in New York City, like, tons of cops live in like Staten Island or Jersey or whatever, and they commute in to these really poor neighborhoods. And I'm pretty sure they all view it as though they're like in the green zone in Iraq, basically. Like, they're there patrolling, and at any moment, some, you know, hardened criminal is going to pull out a knife, and they're going to have to go Rambo mode and shoot them or whatever. That's what's going through their heads a lot of time, I assume.
No, yeah, that's the thing, is I think I just lived in a really affluent area. Like, Saugatuck and Douglas are extremely high income areas where most of the tax income is from people who live in Chicago most of the year, or Detroit or somewhere else, and just come here for 3 months out of the year to stay in their vacation house. Mm-hmm. So all the public services are extremely well funded, but the cops hardly have to do anything because there's barely anybody in town. So the whole dynamic for them is totally different. They have like a total fucking, they have like maybe the cushiest job in America. I don't fucking know. Compared to these like these, you know, NYPD, who, as you say, like, those are soldiers. They might not be very good soldiers. They're idiots
terrible.
And morons.
They're very stupid.
But they have guns and they're encouraged to use them. Like, you know, so yeah, it's a very different situation.
Yeah, those kind of cops you're describing in a small affluent town are basically like, they write speeding tickets. They're like security guards in a mall. They mostly just like drive around and stand around and are like, everything normal, money flowing. And then if anything weird happens, they're like, "Oh, we're the cleanup crew."
They do a lot of DUIs. Their job is mostly DUIs, frankly.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the thing about it is like their jobs are sort of already done. Like, the reason people see them as like less evil is because they don't have to do a lot of work to make it a like corporate white supremacist like area.
Totally. Right? There's not homeless people, so there's no one to harass and kill and try to push away.
I mean, homeless people just can't exist in a town like Saugatuck because, one, like, it's totally inhospitable to them, but also, two, you would get the cops called on you immediately. Like, in an instant. Like, no, it's not like Pittsburgh or even Grand Rapids or, you know, something like that. So,
right. It's like, you do see, like, sometimes, though, like, videos of just like a black guy in a neighborhood like that, and they're like, "Can you check on him?"
Oh, yeah, they'll do a racism real fucking fast. I'm not saying that these guys, I'm not saying that they're like, you know, they're any better than any other cops. I'm just saying that they were nice to me specifically because they probably knew my parents by first and last name. So,
of course,
yeah,
but they're bad.
They're
and
still
they
fucking bad.
Die.
They should probably die.
They should probably fucking die. Well,
interesting note about the Saugatuck cops is they don't exist anymore. Eventually, they were just like, "You don't do anything," and they got rid of them. And now Saugatuck is just patrolled by county and state cops who come through once in a while, which I think really illustrates why the role of policing in that town was fundamentally different from a lot of other places.
Yeah, when it could actually reach a point where a city municipality is just going to be like, "You don't do anything." Thing, and there's not like enough, because there's like a lot of cities where it feels like the cops basically have like a chokehold on the government. And it's like, if you are the occupying army, it's like, at the end of the day, you could just like take over the city and like no one would stop you. So it's like there's this like weird tension where they're basically like they're self-justifying and like will make your life very difficult if you try to cut their funding. But if it's like a town that's small enough, they can be like, "You guys actually don't really do anything, and we can cut your budget."
I think fundamentally in most mid-size or larger cities in America, the police essentially do run the city. Like, I think not unfair to say that police chiefs and commissioners in most cities in America, in a very real sense, have more power than the mayor, even though the mayor is nominally in charge of them. I mean, the great example is that when John Fetterman, classic progressive hero of Braddock, Pennsylvania, we all love, of course, never done anything wrong, our big angelic boy. When he took over as mayor of Braddock, he declined to take over the police department as part of his mayoral duties, and instead deferred all police related to responsibilities to the police chief. Because guess what? It's much easier to maintain your progressive image if you don't actually fucking do anything progressive.
Interesting.
And just let the fucking police do police shit.
I didn't know that was an option in any city, to be like, I'm going to be the mayor, but like not in charge of policing. I thought that was like one of the main roles you took on, is that you're like in control of the police department. Yeah. What are you running? Like bake sales?
He had this PR thing going where he was like, I'm the full-time leader of the Braddock Youth Program and part-time mayor. That was his like shtick, and people lapped it up. Like, he was nationally famous before he was at, like, his that shtick and also being a big boy in shorts who went to Harvard, those shticks together combined made him nationally famous long before he was in national politics. I mean, he leveraged that notoriety into being lieutenant governor, and now he's a fucking senator. So
hate that guy.
I fucking hate that guy. And I personally know that guy. So don't ever tell me, like, if you met him, it would be different. I have met him many times. Fuck you.
Eat shit, John Fetterman.
Eat shit. Die. You probably use the turn lane as a merge lane, bitch. I hate you.
Damn, it's going to be awkward if this is the episode that...
fucking kill yourself.
It's going to be awkward if this is the episode that John Fetterman decides to check out. And then also that guy John knew, who he specifically was like, well, not my friend. Because I'm imagining that guy listening and like, oh yeah, my old friend John, whatever happened to him?
And that...
Oh, I guess we weren't friends. Wow, fuck me, John.
He would act like that too, Edgar, that smug fucking bitch. I hope you and your mom are doing very poorly, you Latvian fuck. Your mom tried to pay me $20 to kill a bunch of chickens. That's traumatizing. I was 16.
But Edgar, if you want to subscribe to the Patreon anyway for the rest of us, I mean, yeah, I don't
I'll
have any grudge
bucks.
Against
fuck you.
You. Feel free to sign up.
Anyway, I guess that's been your beep beep for the week. We were very off script this week, so I hope you liked it.
I
liked it a lot. I had a lot of fun. So if you want more fun, check out my other show, Work Stoppage, which is actually less fun than this show, but more informative. And Bryn's
definitely
other show, Generation Loss, which is probably more fun than this show and more informative. So firing on all cylinders, Bryn.
Yeah, we're banging them out over there.
Crushing it.
Todd wasn't on this episode, but his shop is doomer.shop. And as always, we love you. Stay high. Goodbye.
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 All the original Root Girl Junglists. Your tune this.
Bad girl come to Rama Fadan. She come to Sky, she not want romance. Bad girl with a style and fashion. She gonna Sky till the dance go down. Bad girl come to Rama Fadan. She come to Sky, she not want romance. Bad girl with a style and fashion. She gonna Sky till the dance go down. Big love to all my rude girl. Let me see you come through, girl. To all my rude gal, plus I want to move down. Big love to all my rude gal. Let me see you come through, gal. Big love to all my rude gal, plus I want to move down.
Original Root Girl Junglist. You're tuned in.